We greet you in Jesus' name. Certainly happy to be here, worship the Lord together. I was inspired by your testimonies. If I would have talked, I would have said that I was very blessed by the song that Brother Reed chose, especially the verse that says that from wars, alarms, and deadly pestilence. And my mind went to the parts of the world where there are wars, alarms. It went to where there is coronavirus. How many of you are worried about getting that virus? Well, not yet anyway, are we? It seems like it's far away. And why? How are we so blessed? And what does it do to us to always be so blessed? Well, we thank the Lord and we want to serve Him and do it for Him what we can. I do, I'm not going to apologize for this sermon this morning, but I'm trying to get ready for next Sunday night and an assignment that I had it a half a year ago and I wiggled out of it, but they came back again. And my title is this morning, Poisoning the Well, or Poison in the Well. And what in the world do you say about a subject like poisoning the well? Well, actually, this sermon, the purpose of this is to see the devastating effects that selfish negative attitudes and actions have on ourselves and on brotherhood relationships. You can be turning to 1 Samuel chapter 22 a while, but actually the way I heard this first was the idea of what could have happened to Ruth when she went to Bethlehem. We know that Naomi went with a poisoned well. She was calling herself bitter. Life had dealt hardly with her, and she could hardly see the good side of anything. But Ruth seems to have gone with a positive attitude, and she went right to work. She forgot about herself. She went out there into the field. She labored all day long. She seemed to be cheerful. But the whole context of poisoning the well that I heard it first in was that somebody could have said, you know what that Ruth is about? She's trying to see if she can catch a man. She's trying to see if she can make a good impression. She's trying to see. She has ulterior motives. That's why she shows up first and works last. That's why she takes all that stuff home for her mother-in-law. You can just see it all around. She's a show-off, and she is trying to make a good impression because she has her sights on some old man somewhere with a bag full of money. And by that kind of a comment, she could have someone, maybe another lady, or maybe it could have been a man, could have poisoned the thinking of many people. Because once you have a bias towards someone, you tend to see them in that light. However, let me also say this, that whoever was poisoning the wells of others probably had that so much of a habit that people were getting used to that and weren't so impressed by the statement anyway. In researching this phrase, I found out that the word phrase, poisoning the well, actually came from ancient warfare. As soldiers were pushed out of an area and they were in retreat, they would often go to the sources of water, the streams or the wells, and dump in poison so that when the enemy soldiers came, they would drink that water. Of course, everybody went for the water that was available. And when they drank that water, they would either be sickened or poisoned and died. And in that way, they were able to gain an advantage over an enemy. And let me just say this morning. I'm going to plant this little thought that if you tend to look at life as to what you can win over other people and what you can get out of other people and how you can compete with other people, the temptation to poison wells is going to be very much stronger. As I researched this, I found there's another level of the poisoned well, and that is a person whose thinking is so twisted that they will soon inject into arguments untruths that you don't know how to argue with, and as you follow along, they manipulate you into seeing life the way you see it. They want to see it. They want you to see it. In 1 Samuel chapter 22, we have an example of this. As I prayed and thought about this, I thought, my wife and I discussed it. She talked about the people whose wells were all poisoned against Reuben and Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh. As they went and raised a monument to the Lord, they got accused of offering falsehoods to idols. But then again, I couldn't really blame the situation because I just read in Leviticus how that when there was an altar to the Lord, you couldn't go make any altar anywhere else. So I don't know how to put all that together, okay? But in 1 Samuel chapter 22, we have a man who had a poisoned well. I'd like to just, sadly, I'm going to read a few of these verses, verses 1 and 2. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. Now, is that a fact or is that propaganda? Well, it was a fact. The Bible records it as it really was a situation, a bad situation. It wasn't a good situation. Now, let's go to verse 5. And the prophet Gad said unto David, abide not in the hold, depart and get thee into the land of Judah. Then David departed and came into the forest of Hareth. When Saul heard that David was discovered and the men that were with him, now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds, that all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showed me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day? Then answered Doeg the Edomite, and you know the rest of the story. And he fell, he drank the poison, and it spread and people died. Consequences of that day are terrible when you think about what Doeg led the people to do. But the man that my heart goes out to was a man who was drinking poisons. Saul implied that David was making empty bribes. Was it true? Saul implied that Jonathan had entered into a deceitful alliance with David. Was it true? Saul implied that he was being conspired against and that he was a victim rather than a terroristic threat. Saul implied a lot of hateful things, and Doeg fell for it. As I think about the poisoned well, and I think about church life, I have to admit that I have seen the evidence sometimes. I've seen the effects of it, and I see it as a danger. But this morning, I also am so happy that I can come and preach this at Shirksville first and not be aiming at anybody that I know of. All of us can feel sorry for ourselves, and all of us can build a case. And if he would have gone to see a psychiatrist, and I heard your comment, Brother Duane, at the end of the message about, a Sunday school class, and I wish we could have started there, the idea of casting down imaginations and everything that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God. And I thought, if you only know what else we're going to be talking about. If he could have gone to see a psychiatrist, the psychiatrist would have shook his head and said, Saul, you have paranoid schizophrenia. You think everybody's out to get you, and you are about to go crazy. More about that later. I'd like to think of this message in four different ways. I like to think about the source of the poison, the course, the force, and the recourse. That's the way our message will be divided today. Now, I am thankful that in most of our relationships, the stakes are not so high. But I am also very aware that our selfish goals can create mythical enemies. And if we feed on that, we will drop that poison and plant it in other relationships. And we will battle against each other in shameful ways. And Saul is a sad example of that. Looking at the source, where does all the poison come from? Turn to Revelation chapter 12. We're going to look at a lot of verses this morning, and not nearly all of them. I just gave up trying to put an orderly organization, and you're going to say, well, I thought we're talking about source now, and we're really in force. Okay, yes, I know. I like the way the word rhymed. Kind of gave some outline to it, but I did have a hard time sticking that all together. But looking at the source, in Revelation chapter 12, there is great rejoicing in heaven. And in verse 10, it says, and I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. Satan has a grudge. You remember the story of Job and how he went before God and how he accused Job's good actions and blamed them on something wrong. He says, that man's got ulterior motives. You know why he's acting like that? Because he wants your blessings, your rewards. And I almost hear that sometimes, that you shouldn't serve God because you want the reward in the end. What? You should serve God because you love him. Yeah, but okay, both of those are worthy, okay? You know, but that sounds sort of like what Satan did. But he is the accuser, and this is where it all starts. Really, when we have I want to talk about the course, and how it starts in us is something else, but we'll get there. But the one who's at the back of it all, the one who loves to see people accusing each other, people in bitterness against each other, he loved to see Saul choose that resentment. He loved to see that. He started it, and he made a lot of hay on that. We just need to recognize it where it is. Now, I'd like you to go to Titus 2. Because in Titus chapter 2, we have a church leader being enjoined to talk to all the classes of people. And in this, he doesn't seem to skip anyone. And he says that, I want you to start with the old men first. And then he says, I want you to talk to the old ladies. So this morning, I'm going to read a verse to the older ladies. I don't know if you consider yourself in that category or not. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not devils, diablos, neither given to much wine, but teachers of good things. Did I read that word right? That verse right? False accusers. If you find it in Strong's, the Greek word is diablos. I'm probably saying it the Spanish way, because if you learn another language, you tend to read other languages that way. But it's D-I-A-B-L-O-S, devils. It's the word devils. But it's translated false accusers. You see, it's not hard for the devil to put a little bit of devil in all of us, even if you're an old lady or an old man. Or a young man, or a young lady. But why does he pick on the old ladies? Why does he say, why does it consistently come up, the warning against old ladies or young ladies being busybodies and wagging their tongues too much and getting into things that they, I don't know. Well, let's go to 3 John 1. After talking about a bishop who was had a poisoned well. It doesn't exclude any of us. In 3 John, John pronounces the judgment on this man. I would have loved to have been there to see what he did with Diotrephes. But verse 11 says it plainly. Beloved, follow not that which is evil. Don't follow Diotrephes and the way he prates against others with malicious words, how he dumps his poison into other people's wells, how he turns against those missionaries and he gets other people to turn against them. And if you don't cooperate with his regime of ostracizing certain people, then if you don't cooperate, then he'll throw you out, is what he says. And John says this, beloved, follow not that which is evil. Don't follow Diotrephes, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. And so the source of this is having the devil in us, being able to see and make accusations and dwelling on that. Go to James 3. We'll probably circle back around to James, but I want you to see the source. James 3 talks about the tongue that no man can tame, and it pours out good, but it also pours out poison. And how can that be? And I've thought about using this for our text verse. So can no fountain send forth, can a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? That's verse 11. Can out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing? But what I want to say as getting to the source is get all the way down to verse 15. This wisdom. Now, wisdom means to solve problems. But you can get your way of solving problems from the devil. You can get it from common sense, which is earthly. You can get it from sensual, which is natural, or you can go to the devil and get your way to solve problems. You can put people out of your life through your resentment and accusation and critical spirit. But the wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. You might say, well, how is that different than talking about the course, which is our very next point, the source? But he says that it is devilish from the devil. So this morning, I would just like us to see that in its harsh reality. That when I open my mouth to drop a little poison, to poison somebody's thinking, and it's so easy for me to just bias somebody, but you need to know what else that person does. But what do you do if you see somebody starting to make friends with somebody who has often hurt other people? What do you do about that? Are you being hurt by it? Well, let's just keep sorting this through a little bit before we get to that. Point number 2 is the course of poisoning the well. And I would like you to come back to Leviticus 19. Leviticus 19, we should start with verse 16, 17, and 18. What do you think it was like to live in a camp with about 1 million other people? A lot of them were related to you, and of course some weren't. And when you went for firewood, you probably scrapped with them. Verse 16, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people. But that's so much fun to go and talk about the bad stuff other people did. Neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I looked that up in other translations, and it carried the idea that if you see somebody about to get hurt, just don't stand there. If somebody's being run down, or somebody's being defrauded, somebody's being taken advantage of, or somebody's being portrayed wrong, you need to open your mouth and do something about it. Don't let people spill blood and you just stand there and don't take it. So if somebody starts to run someone down, when you're there and in that presence, take the courage and say, but wait a minute. Is that the whole story? I am the Lord. Verse 16. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. So where does it start? Well, I think, in talking about the course of poisoning the well, I really, really believe, I don't know which one to say first, but it's because of a contaminated heart condition, a grudge, a hatred. There's something there that likes to hear that bad about someone else. There's something in there that likes to pass that on to someone else, to destroy that reputation, to plant that question mark, that likes to do that, okay? But he says, don't have that grudge. Don't have that hatred. If you see a problem, go and rebuke your neighbor and don't suffer sin upon him. As I was pondering that, I didn't know whether to put that first or whether to go to Hebrews 12. In Hebrews 12, and I know I preached on what thank have ye and the grudge part, and Hebrews 12 just keeps pulling me back there again and again. Because he's talking about a man who had really had been hurt. And Esau really had been hurt. And chastening hurts. And in this, he's trying to give us the mental attitude that we should endure contradiction of sinners against ourselves, verse 3. We should accept chastening. We should see it as the good hand of God. And in verse 15, in that same subject, carrying on down, he says, looking diligently, lest any man fail from the grace of God. You see, the thing to purge that hatred and to take care of that hurt and to take care of that grudge, we're talking about the course now. I have been wronged. I wasn't treated right. The thing to deal with that is the grace of God. Now, in the course, I don't want to spill over into the recourse too much, but I still want to drop in here that God's grace and forgiveness are inconquerable. Inconquerable. That power is in our life. It cannot be conquered by any bad thing that happens. Well, let's go back to the course. And so if you have that hatred, that grudge, you're failing of the grace of God, then other things happen. Now, I looked up the word tale-bearing in the Old Testament, and I found a couple of verses. I found that it means in Proverbs 16:28, a scandal-monger. That one in Leviticus 19 is a scandal-monger, but turn to Proverbs next. If you have poison, you're going to share it. It's just going to come out. We got to deal with it. And if it's in us, the course of it is that it soon spills into other people's lives. And in Proverbs 16, I would just like to read this. There are just so many verses about this in the Bible. Can I back up to verse 27? An ungodly man diggeth up evil, and in his lips there is as a burning fire. You see, there's something wrong in the heart. A froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. Wait a minute. Just because I like to drop bad things other people doesn't mean that I'm bad. Really? Really? Aren't we saying more about ourselves than anything else? Aren't we? There's a lot being said. In Proverbs 16, here in verse 28, it says, a whisperer, and that means somebody who, or a talebearer? No, it's the same one. Anyway, I'm kind of mixing myself up here, looking up these words. It means to roll to pieces. Roll to pieces. You squashed them out and roll them to pieces. Well, that's that. Let's go to 1 Peter 4:15. This came in a common problem in the New Testament as people came to the Lord, and it's addressed in almost all the epistles, writings, all the apostles as they talked about this. And sometimes it just starts out as being something that's not all that bad. Verse 15, but let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Wait a minute. In the context of murderer, thief, evildoer, you're going to put, I just love news. I like to know what's going on. I like to talk. One morning, this is a number of years ago, we had some neighbors, and when I picked up the phone to call somebody, I heard two sisters in the church running down, going down through the church and talking about this person and that person and the other person. I still don't know to this day how that happened. But if what you say, ladies, brothers, if what you say was heard by everyone, you know, you sent it out on the wrong WhatsApp chat or whatever, then what? Then what? Don't suffer as a busybody in other men's matters. And this simply means a bishop where you don't belong to be one. That surprised me because actually the word bishop, episkopos, is in that Greek word where it says meddling into other people, overseeing in other people's matters that isn't yours. Well, when we hear something, see something negative, we have to say it. And when we say something negative, then someone will carry it out. And we find ourselves violating 1 Corinthians 13. You know the verse, I won't take you there, but in verse 6 it says about true love that they rejoice not in iniquity. There's scandals going around all the time. There's scandals going around now. Do I rejoice in those scandals? Do I rejoice in that iniquity? Do I rejoice in that negative talk? Wow, that's not true love, is it? In James 3, back to the chapter about the tongue, he says that whenever we involve ourselves in that, the course of this is that there is confusion in every evil work. Now, this is the course that it goes. It goes from a little hatred attitude, and it goes into being a gossip, and it goes into overseeing and meddling into matters that aren't ours, and it goes into affecting other people. The third point is the force. Turn to Matthew 18. In Matthew 18, he describes, I think this can be children. I think it can be weak ones in the church. I think it can be other people. But he talks about this, how wrong it is if we scandalize, if we offend, if we hurt someone. And these are the words that he chooses to use. Matthew chapter 18. I'll start with verse 6. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, maybe because they heard you talking about them in a negative way, or because you said something in a negative way to a little one, if you cause them to stumble, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense cometh. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into the everlasting fire. Verse 10, take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones. For I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of thy Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. Do you see why he says that verse there? Our goal is to save people. Our goal is to redeem people. And if we end up offending them and sending them the wrong way, it brings untold heartache in this life and in the world to come. Just to think that it would be better to have your hands or feet cut off than to be sent to eternal suffering because of offending someone through your poison. Well, in Saul's self-delusion, he went down his road. The things he began to tell himself is that everybody's against me. It's not fair where I am. It's just not fair. I have to put up with stuff that other people don't have to put up with. Even my own family's turning against me. And as he did that, he descended into, paranoid schizophrenia. He saw everybody out to get him. He lost his mental health. And eventually, in the force of this, it took him into extreme loneliness, it took him into depression, and into suicide. That's where it took him. It was a course. Do never doubt the power of poisoning wells and drinking from a poison well and what it can do to you. Never doubt that, where it can go. But there's a recourse. The last point of my message this morning is the recourse. I guess we'll go to Colossians 3. I've come to love this verse. He's talking about people who are born again, and he's encouraging them. He'd never been to Colossae, he never met those people, but they were a result of the Christianity being planted, I believe, in Ephesus, and then it went from Ephesus to Colossae. And in Colossians, he's writing to them, and he's telling them about what you have to put off, mortify, and deal with these things. But then he says, gets to first the really bad stuff about immorality, but then he gets to the things about relationships, put off all these anger, wrath, malice, and don't be deceitful. But verse 10, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him that created him. There's only one person that can make you different than what you are naturally, and that's the Lord Jesus. And the only way he can make you different is if you ask him to come into your life and change you from the inside out. And then he says, the more you get to know him, the more you get to walk with him, the more you talk and relate to Christ, the more he will change you into his image. And as that happens, you will put on, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel or a complaint against any, it doesn't have to turn to bitterness, it can turn to forgiveness. I love the recourse that it makes, because the very things that the devil can use to poison you, God can use to chasten you and give you a loving heart. But the goal, the difference is, do you see people as somebody that you want to help them get to heaven? Or do you see them as competition in your life and you have to put them down? And it all depends on whether we're going to wear God's glasses or the devil's glasses. That's what, you know, and it is a real journey. I also like Romans 12:3 because he talks about by the renewing of your mind and the fact that we can do that. And from Romans 3:12, where he talks about that, you can turn there too. I'd like to show you how he spills from that by the renewing of your mind as you know Jesus, to prove, to demonstrate, to find in the perfect will of God. For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly. And that's that word soberly deals with the same root of schizophrenia, to put on the right mind. And the fact of the matter is, it's not all about me and it's not all about you. And if somebody offends us, we're just tiny little pieces in God's big puzzle. But if we are willing to fit into his place that he has for us in God's big puzzle, it's going to get better and better until it'll be unbelievably good. If Saul could have just accepted that no, his son wouldn't be king, and somebody else would be king. The dynasty was going to change, but he wanted to be a part of God's program where he was. And he could have served David. It could be a whole different picture. How did Jonathan come out of there with such an unpoisoned well? How did he come out of that? It's because he was humble. He accepted God's plan. And when you and I get little enough and not think of ourselves more highly than we ought to think, but think soberly, and we fit in with God's plan, it's going to be unbelievably good someday. But not now. But someday it will be. It is good now, too. That's much better than the poison way. Now, one more closing thought. Matthew 7. In Matthew 7, Jesus starts out with that it's wrong for us to judge. And it's always somewhat of a, you can't, just because you see me going into a bar, or just because you see me looking at something I shouldn't be looking at, or just because you hear me say cuss words, you can't say anything, wait a minute. We're going to read verses 1 to 5, but then we're also going to go down to verse 15, and we're going to try to figure out what Jesus is saying. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest, why do you keep on looking at that splinter that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. Do you see what seems to be the incongruity between the first part of this chapter and then the second set of verses that I read? People get mixed up there. They either go to one extreme or the other. They either are always looking for false prophets and casting everybody out because of their maybe a little splinter that's in their eye, or they're accepting false prophets and saying, you can't judge anyone. It is wrong to assign evil motives when somebody is sincerely trying to serve the Lord, but their humanity is showing through. That just happens. We all see the faults in each other. The humanity will shine through. And he says, if you've dealt with the hypocrisy in your own life, if there's something in your life and you've known that it's there, you go deal with that. And if you've dealt with that and your heart is singing and in peace with God and you're still troubled with your brother, then go and talk to him and deal with that. Just like Matthew 18, we skipped over those verses, but in that chapter, instead of offending little ones, he says to go and talk to your brother and get that resolved. Get relationships worked out. Because if you don't, your poison will just keep going out everywhere else. But when you see a false prophet and you see his life and you see what's coming out of that, it is right to say there's a wrong fruit coming off of that tree. If your well is poisoned, every drink that you drink will be bitter. If life is a bitter experience for you, then there's something wrong at the source. If every drink that you drink is poison, then you will automatically be dumping that into other people's wells.